Shall we get this started?
Let's get it started. Everything's coming up. Sammy's. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Rate, Debate, Recreate. I'm Sammy Purcell.
And I'm Logan Keller.
We're back for episode 4 of season 3.
Woo!
Very exciting. Yeah. I know. Hey, Logan.
Yes, Sammy.
What is your favorite Stephen Sondheim musical? I'm sure this is what I asked you last time. I wonder if
this is so easy for me to answer. It's by far and away Sunday in the Park with George.
Oh, man.
Like no competition. I get no shade to his other shows. I obviously he's done some amazing things, but Sunday is like a masterpiece above all his other shows for me.
It's the most perfect thing that's ever existed. I also love Company. I really like Company.
Yes. And Company's a close one and has some of the best music, I'll say.
Yes. And I quite enjoy this one we're about to talk about. So that's a little hint, I guess. So for those of you who don't know, this show is called Rate, Debate, Recreate, if I can get it out. And every week, Logan and I pick a show based on a category. We rate that show on a scale of 1 to 10. We debate which one is better, and then we think of one aspect that we might change or recreate, hence the name. So again, each week we have a category, and this week that category is Stephen Sondheim, R.I.P.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
But so excited to talk about some of his shows.
Me too. And my show is A Little Night Music.
And my show is Gypsy, which is a little bit of a not stretch, because it is him.
Stretch. He did the lyrics.
He did the lyrics, but it was, like, one of his first, like, bigger shows.
Yes. It was right after West Side Story, I think, because after West Side Story, he was like, I'm never fucking just writing lyrics again. And lo and behold.
And here he was.
So I think Oscar Hammerstein said something like, I've watched this documentary a million times. Oscar Hammerstein said, do West Side Story because you need to learn how to work with a master, because it was Leonard Bernstein. And then he said, do Gypsy because you need to learn how to write for a star, because it was Ethel Merman. So he like had to write to a specific person, which I think is very good advice.
And that he did.
Yeah,
that he did.
Very good advice. Oh, yeah. Tweet Ethel. should we get into a little summary of both of these shows?
Let's do it.
All right. So. A Little Night Music. I guess one of his lesser known, if you're just like a casual Sondheim fan. I have the original cast recording of this on vinyl. I found it like at a secondhand record shop, and it's really awesome. It's fun to listen to. I listen to it a lot.
It's really beautiful music.
It's so gorgeous. We're going to talk about it. But A Little Night Music is a musical with music and lyrics by Stephen Sondheim, like we said, and a book by Hugh Wheeler. Inspired by an Ingmar Bergman film called Smiles of a Summer Night. And it sort of just like centers around the relationships between a bunch of couples in like turn of the century Sweden, Ingmar Bergman, around 1900, so that turn of the century. There are a lot of turn of the centuries. I never know what that's supposed to refer to.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a deceptively, it's not a complicated plot, but there's just like a lot of people involved. So I'm going to kind of go through the couples and set it up and then not really do too much and just say kind of where everyone ends up. So you have Anne and Frederick, who are recently married. Anne is much younger than Frederick. She's like 18. I think he says that at one point that she's 18, and he is not 18. He has like a 19-year-old son. He's not 18. But so she's much younger than him, and they've been married for, I think, like a few weeks, maybe a few months at this point, and she still won't have sex with him because she is like repulsed by him. And he's very frustrated about that. You have his son, who's like 19, 20, who I mentioned before, named Henrik, who is studying to be a priest, but is very sexually frustrated and is in love with Anne, or at least like really horny for Anne. Who knows which one it is, but whatever. Then you have Petra, who is, I think she's Anne's maid, who is basically just like, I'm gonna fuck whoever I want and you can't stop me. Having sex is fine. I'm young. I'm gonna do what I want for right now, which Go Petra. And then we've got Desiree, who's an actress who Frederick had an affair with, and he still harbors some feelings for her. They haven't seen each other in a while. And she has a daughter named Frederica. I wonder who her father is. Who lives with her grandmother, Madame Armfelt, who is basically like judging everyone the whole time. Like very classic Sondheim old lady, sassy old lady vibes. Mm-hmm. Which Desiree has too, but. And then we've got the last couple is Carl Magnus and Charlotte. So Carl Magnus is having an affair with Desiree. Charlotte's like very aware of this fact that she's just kind of like living her life. And like she feels like she can't really do anything about it until later at some point. And the plot basically starts when Frederick meets back up with Desiree at a play. He goes to see her in a play. And they sort of rekindle their romance, but she is having this affair with Carl Magnus. So she's kind of stuck between these two guys. Carl Magnus is like super hot. He's stupid, but he's a very good looking guy in every production I've seen of this. She eventually decides to invite Frederick and his family back to her grandmother or her mother's house. So to be kind of like, let's hang out. And then Anne finds out that Frederick like is kind of rekindling things with Desiree. And even though she doesn't really like him, she's like, fuck, we're married. Like, come on. She finds out through Charlotte. Charlotte and Carl Magnus decide to like crash the weekend as well, and they all end up in this house together. Stuff ensues. Lots of dramatic relations go down. Desiree sings "Send in the Clowns."
Iconic
behavior. And then at the end, you kind of end up with the couple switching around a bit. So Charlotte and Carl Magnus stay together. We'll talk about that. Anna Kendrick appears out of nowhere and starts singing "Ladies Who Lunch," and everyone rises. That's what happens. Anne and Henrik, dear Lord, get together. Desiree and Frederick, after like a couple little hiccups, also get together. And that's basically the end. I'm gonna give a little night music. I'm gonna give it 8 out of 10 clowns.
Awesome.
I really, really like this show. I know that we talked before this started recording and you didn't watch what I sent you. You watched the movie, which is not very good.
Yeah.
So I don't know what your rating is going to be, but I watched the 1990 New York Opera production. So the opera does this quite a bit, which makes sense. It was very operatic. And it was just lovely. I was a little skeptical when I first put it on. I don't know why, but like it was lovely. I really had a great time.
So I didn't, as I was myself, I watched the movie, which is kind of notoriously bad. But I'm also pretty familiar with the music. So based on those two things, I'm going to give the show, which for me is the movie, unfortunately, a 6 out of 10, but yeah. I am going to give the music a 9 out of 10 because it's just so, it's so beautiful and it like deserves to be praised.
Yes, it's absolutely stunning.
Awesome. Okay. Well, my show is Gypsy. If you're unfamiliar, Gypsy tells the story of a woman named Rose and her two daughters, Baby June and Louise. It actually is based off of the memoirs of real life, like striptease burlesque performer Gypsy Rose Lee, which also, side note, crazy fast turnaround between the memoir coming out and the show going up on Broadway.
Really?
The memoir came out in 1957, and the show opened on Broadway in 59. So it's Rose, her two daughters, and they're playing the vaudeville circuit around the U.S. in the 1920s, so kind of traveling around the U.S., putting on these little variety act shows. Rose's entire existence revolves around making her daughter June into a star. And along the way, the family is like struggling to make ends meet, but Rose is able to discover money in various ways through her father at first, through her boyfriend, promised husband, Herbie, and even through kind of through wage theft, I guess, through some of the boys that she kidnaps, to be in her show. one thing I think is interesting, the show definitely posits at the beginning Rose and June as the leads, like at least that's always my perception, but the show really is about the relationship, I think, between Rose and Louise, her like lesser daughter, who is not the star at first. So June eventually runs off with one of the boys in the group due to disagreements with her mother. Rose turns over a new leaf, or Rose in the case of this show, and basically decides to change course, and make Louise into a star. So that's the basic premise. I'm going to give Gypsy an 8 out of 10 ecdysiasts, which is French for someone who sheds their skin in some places known as a stripper. But at these prices, I'm an ecdysiast, baby.
I'm going to give Gypsy, so I guess, hot take. I think, like, the best part, I think there are parts of the show that are really, really good. And I think, like, Mama Rose is an iconic character. It's not my favorite music in the world, like, besides the bit too big songs, which I'm saying this, like, I'm going to give it, like, a 4. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. Because I think, like, I mean, Rose is one of the most, I don't know, like, we overuse iconic, but, like, it's iconic.
No, it's true.
Like,
it is truly iconic. Roles,
like, that you can play. And both of her songs are amazing. I mean, she has more songs, but, you know, the two I'm talking about are incredible. And, like, I just finished watching the Imelda Staunton version.
Oh, God.
And I want to give a billion stars to Imelda Staunton.
Truly. And Laura Pulver, TBH.
Yes.
I was going to give it a 7. And then I when I was creating my review, like, section, I bumped it up to an 8. Mostly because when it soars, it soars. And, like, I also just felt like I felt like I needed to acknowledge the, like, the impact that this show has had on my score a little bit. But I agree, like, overall, if I had just seen it and wasn't trying to, like, save face, I don't know.
I might have been wasn't trying to be cool. But Imelda Staunton, I mean, just the end. We'll talk about it. She's incredible. And there have been other incredible roses as well. Okay.
Well, shall we get into it?
Let's get into it. I mean, we've talked about the music for A Little Night Music. It's right there in the title. So I just wanted to talk about, like, how hard it is before I talked about anything else. So I think it's maybe, I mean, Sondheim is, like, not easy. Like, that's, like, the whole point. I did, like, original cast did, like, a Sondheim review, which we'll talk about a little bit later, too. But, like, it is, like, notoriously really fucking hard.
Yeah.
That review is called Putting It Together. It's just really difficult. It's difficult to find the, like, notes, to find the progressions, to act it all. It's really hard. And I think this is probably his most difficult, I think, in my opinion, like, particularly vocally. There is so much going on. So I just wanted to talk about a couple things. So, like,
it's up there with Pandemonium from Putnam in difficulty.
Yeah. It is Pandemonium.
Which is only half a joke.
Yeah. There's a lot of, like, counterpoint in there. So, like, I'm not a music major, so please excuse my, like, very facile explanation of this. But it's basically, like, the lines of music themselves are independent. Like, the melodies are independent. You don't necessarily think that they go together. But, like, they depend on each other rhythmically and, like, melodically. You just, like, wouldn't think about it from hearing them at first. So at the very beginning of the show, you have this, I guess, triplet of now, later, and soon. So I'm gonna mix up Frederick and Henrik. I'm gonna call them by the other person's names the whole time. I do that all the time. But Frederick sings now, which is about how he's, like, he wants sex now, basically. Henrik sings later, which is he feels like everyone's always telling him to wait, and he doesn't want to wait. So kind of what that is, very frustrated teenage boy. And then Anne sings soon, which is her kind of trying to convince herself that she will have sex with Frederick soon, even though she does not want to. And they sing them all as, like, different solos first, and at the end they, like, come together, and it's just so interesting to hear because they sound, like, pretty different. I mean, they're all, like, they have different melodies, like, they have different sort of, like, tempos. They just don't sound like they would work together. So when they all start meshing, you're like, oh, this is cool. And, like, this Sondheim guy, he's smart, he knew what he was doing. And then the music is also mostly, I think most of it is a waltz, so, like, 3/4 tempo, which is cool. And it's also just very operatic. So I guess, like, the NYC Opera has, like, put it in its rotation, basically, at this point, from what I've read online. I don't live in New York, and I have not been to the opera, so I wouldn't know. But that's what the internet has told me. So it's, like, a very operatic piece of work. And it takes a lot of very, very talented voices to sing it. Like, there's some stuff later in particularly that Henrik does where he's like, dun, 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 like hitting that high note. It is just incredibly difficult. Like, every time he does it, every time I'm listening to that vinyl and he does it, it like shocks me a little bit. Mm-hmm. But speaking about how difficult all that music, I think it is so interesting that Sendin the Clowns is in this show in particular. Because it's probably vocally, like, the easiest song in the show. Big emphasis on vocally. And it was written sort of last minute, which I actually didn't know. So it was written after most of the other stuff was done. So the role of Desiree originally was kind of non-singing. Like, she has a glamorous life where she's like, da-na-na-na-na, na. Like, she speaks in rhythm and kind of hits various notes, but, like, not too much. And then I guess when Sondheim learned that the original Desiree, Svenja Strands, could sing, kind of, but she had just had, like, trouble sustaining phrases. So she couldn't, like, hit those big operatic notes and, like, sustain them for a really long time. And she kind of, like, falls off at the end of, like, sustained phrases and stuff. So he wrote this, like, particularly with her in mind. Like, speaking of writing for Ethel Merman, like, he wrote this with Svenja Strands' like vocal strengths in mind. And that's another thing that makes him so great. He's just very, very good at like writing to a performer's strengths, which is a very hard thing to do. And like I said, it's not like a difficult song to sing. It's like da 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 da. Like, it's just not very hard, but it is so difficult to act. Like, Desiree, I feel like, is like really on. Like, she's an actress. And in this 1990 version I watched, like, the actress who played her, his name is escaping me, but we will pause while I look it up. So the actress who plays her in the 1990 version, her name is Sally Ann Howes. Sally Ann Howes. Yes, Howes, no L. And she, it was very interesting watching her because she played Desiree, and like, I think this is good. She played Desiree as like very, very on. Like, she's an actress. Like, she's on the whole time. Like, she's putting up a front, which I'll also get into that later. And for this song, like, what part of what's so embarrassing about it, because it is just like about like purely being embarrassed by like how open you're being, and I think it's like doubly embarrassing for her because she's like not that open usually. So like the one time she like opens herself up to like telling someone how she feels, and it's kind of thrown back in her face a little bit. So I guess for context, she like asks Frederick to be with her, and he basically says, I want to, but I can't leave my wife. And she's just so embarrassed by it. And I think like the work in this song is so hard because like she doesn't want to like let him see how embarrassed she is, but like by virtue of the song, like she kind of it has to come out. And so it's like a hard line to walk. And it's very interesting watching this. So this 1990 version is on YouTube, like very easily accessible. And during the intermission, they have like a whole segment basically where they like show Sondheim talking about how he wrote the song and like all the stuff. And then they have Sally Ann Howes like practicing it and like working on it during rehearsal and stuff. And I don't know much about her like acting background, but it was very interesting like watching kind of an opera company like work through that song. Like, the guy who was working with her was like, it act like you can't think of the singing first. Like, don't think of the singing first. Don't think of the singing first. Which is a very interesting way to tell someone to like work for an opera musical singer. and I think she does a wonderful job. But I just love this show. And like, speaking of that kind of tension between like, putting on a front and like letting someone see who you really are, I think like this show is very like silly and funny and like fizzy, but I think it has like a pretty tender heart that comes out in moments like that. And I think in a way it's like deceptively superficial. Like, it's about kind of like the superficiality of these people and like what they're hiding and like what's funny about them having to be superficial and like what's silly about that, but also like what's sad about it and what is like causing them to put up those fronts in the first place. And I think like the show ends happily. Like, it's a musical comedy. Like, it ends with people happy and in love. But I think like part of what the show is about is like what happens when those fronts disappear. Like, it can be when we're happiest, but it also can be like when we're at our lowest point, like when we've like opened ourselves up, like and had it thrown back in her face or whatever. But ultimately, I think it lands on the side of like, don't let that fear like stop you from doing it or whatever. Because it's a musical comedy. It's happy.
Yeah.
But I sort of wanted to go through the characters as well and talk about like what fronts they're kind of putting up. And like there are different like examples of like it all kind of crashing down throughout the show. Like Send in the Clowns is probably the best example. But like with Henrik, you have Henrik who's like pretending that he wants to be a priest, but is like just trying to pretend that he's in love with God because he's in love with his stepmother. And that's terrifying. And like there's like a scene at dinner where he like kind of just like blows up and he's like, what the fuck are you guys doing? Like he just kind of like screams and like lets all his frustrations out and everyone starts laughing at him. And that's like terrifying. Like that's also like really embarrassing to like finally be like say what you think about everything that's going on around you and have people like not take you seriously and laugh at you. Like that's terrifying. And then you have Anne who's like she wants to be like an adult and she is like married and she enjoys the life she's living, but she's like so thoroughly repulsed at the idea of having sex with her husband and like just like cannot bring herself to cross that line. You have Desiree, we've talked about, Frederick, who's like afraid of like his own fading virility. Like he married her for a reason, like to feel young, and he's afraid of losing that. And then you have Charlotte, who's my favorite character, who we'll talk about, but Charlotte, who's like, just so like sad and angry with herself for like allowing how she feels like allowing herself to be treated by her husband, by Carl Magnus, the way she has been, but like pushes it away with like so much like humor and like bite and like just kind of nastiness, but like in a funny way. Like she's like, I don't know, have you seen those TikToks of like your friend who's like brutally honest about men? It's like, that's Charlotte, but like also Charlotte's being cheated on. So like, you know, but she is my favorite character. And I think she like exemplifies kind of that idea best. Like the woman who plays her in the 1990 version is so wonderful. Her name is Maureen Moore. And fun fact, she made her Broadway debut in Gypsy in 1974.
Oh,
we got some tie-ins. But she is so freaking funny in this. Like she's so biting and like really like very snippy in her humor, like it's very clipped and comes out so fast and it's like very cruel, but then it like all coalesces into like this really like awful like hurt in everyday a little death, which is just like the saddest song. And you meet her, you get this idea that she doesn't really care. Like when you first meet her, she like really doesn't care about what her husband's doing. But when she sings that song, like, no, it's so much sadder because she like cares so, so, so much. So she like puts on this front, like she doesn't. And I think if I had one critique, it's the Carl Magnus and Charlotte musical comedy ending of it all. It's just not, I get it, which I'll talk about it more in my recreate. I think I'll save it for that because I get why it's there. Like, I get it, but it's just I want more for my girl, you know.
Yeah,
she deserves more. That's like most of what I had. I kind of want to hear you talk about the movie. I haven't seen it in so long. I just remember like it's not very good. I feel like Elizabeth Taylor gets a lot of the brunt of it, but I don't remember thinking she was really the problem.
I told you this before we started, I couldn't even get through it. Like it was just not it was hard to follow. It didn't, I don't know. I just was like not feeling it, to be honest.
Not feeling it. Diana Rigg is in that, I think.
The best part I've never seen it, but what I know to be really great about A Little Light Music is the music. Yeah. And like, it wasn't even that good in the movie.
Yeah.
I just like, do yourself a favor and watch the opera version if you're going to.
It's really good. It's free on YouTube. It has a fun intermission where you can like listen to Sondheim talk about Send in the Clowns while you get snacks or whatever. Great. Yeah.
Awesome. Any other thoughts before I get into Gypsy?
Not really. I'm starting to breeze through these things, you know?
Yeah, good. That's efficiency. So, Gypsy, where to begin? So, yeah, I kind of talked about this in bumping my rating from a 7 to an 8, but, like, definitely think it's important to acknowledge, like, that this, it was and is a groundbreaking show. Yes. It did, like, pave way for lots of types of roles, like, especially for, like, belting women on Broadway. Like,
older women.
Before, yeah. And a lot of shows before this were very like operatic, were very like formal singing. And that was what was associated with Broadway. And like writing for Ethel Merman, like this was really one of the first like brassy, I think what we associate now with like In the Heights, what that did to Broadway and shaking, you know, the type of music that we show on Broadway, I kind of think this did in its own way. So like, I think that's really important. I think that like the parts that Gypsy gets well, it's like a 10 out of 10. Like it nails them. But I also think that there are quite a few cons that I'm going to talk about. I'll talk about pros and cons. I'll talk about one of the themes I like in the show. And then I want to also touch on some of the different versions of Gypsy that have been done. So let me start with the cons, because I want to get that out of the way, because I really do think there's a lot of positive stuff in this show to talk about. But to start with, I before yesterday, actually, I didn't really know anything about the source material or like the people that it's based off of. And I watched this like pretty crazy, like,
I didn't get a chance to watch that, but
it's totally fine. Yeah. I still recommend it. Like, it's this video called The Twisted Account Behind Gypsy, a Musical Fable on YouTube, by the Drama Dorks. It's really, really interesting. It dives into like the narrative accounts of the real life people of Rose, Louise, and June, how they like do and don't match Gypsy the musical, the like discrepancies, the areas where they dramatized it, the areas where they really didn't, things like that. Anyway, but I'm going to be mostly sticking to Gypsy as a musical. But I want to start by saying, like, I feel like, so they definitely did dramatize the source material quite a bit, which I'm totally okay with. It's inspired by, it's not meant to act as a direct, you know, translation. But what's interesting to me is they like dramatize the source material, but I almost feel like they're like afraid to really go, like, I think that they downplay the abuse aspect of the relationship between Rose and
I kind of thought that watching it back too, like it felt like really, I don't know, you go ahead, but I felt the same way I thought.
Yeah, like that there's just such clear manipulation of her children and abuse. Like listening to Little Lamb, I'm like, oh my God, this bitch doesn't know how old she is. Like,
I know.
Because she's literally like in her probably young, like late teens, early 20s. And is being told to act like she's 10 years old.
She was said we're never older than 9 or whatever.
It's crazy. And like, look, I get that like stage moms have been a thing, will continue to be a thing. There's a whole morality aspect there that I'll talk about later. But like, there are clear moments where it crosses the line from like deranged stage mom to like abusive parent. And I just kind of wish they had like even acknowledge that a little bit more. I don't know. I felt like that was something that was kind of missing for me. I feel like the most that we get of that acknowledgement is in some productions which stray from the original source material. I don't you know about the like three different endings that have been done.
Yes. Yeah.
This is a good time to talk about it. Yeah. So there are basically three different like endings that have been done. So the original is Rose sings her big Rose's Turn number at the end. Louise comes out and is like, puts her arm around her and they walk off stage together. So the idea is that they've like reconciled and will start fresh.
Meldeth Staunton.
Yes. The second version is like a pretty different one that was done, I want to say, in the 70s revival and also in the 2008 with Patti LuPone, which is a much starker one where she sings Rose's Turn. Louise is like, basically like, she still is crazy. This bitch is still crazy.
Yeah.
And walks away, like turns her back on her mom and leaves. And Rose is like, great, like manic on stage, just kind of like there. And then the lights go out. It kind of gives, that is my favorite ending. Gives me chills. And then there's like an in-between one, which they did in the 2003 production with Bernadette Peters, where Louise walks off and then Rose walks off behind her, and it's kind of up for interpretation if Louise is like leaving her or just kind of leaving the way, and right before like Rose looks into the audience with this like kind of, again, like deranged face, and then the lights go out. So there are different interpretations of how it ends. I definitely prefer the 2008 production, where it's like, I don't know, I love happy endings, but I love non-happy endings more.
Yeah.
especially when I think it's like the point of the show. Like, I don't know, it's, to me, it's kind of like ending Next to Normal on a happy note. Like, that's not the point. And I think it kind of defeats the purpose of a show to like wrap it up and make things, you know, make the audience feel happy, which I think there's a time and place for, but I don't think that has to be every show. And I think this is a show that benefits from not having that. So that's one thing. Another thing that kind of irks me about this show is that I think it's a bit narrow in its focus. Like, I straight up don't care about any of the characters besides Rose and Louise and like a little bit June. And like, even then, like, I care about Rose, but I'm not like rooting for her. So it's hard because there's really only one character that you're like going to bat for. And the rest, so it just makes like all the, anytime Herbie's on stage, yes, is he nice? Is he sweet? Like, yes.
Poor
I'm
Herbie.
Just like, I'm like, get off stage. Like, let's get to the meat of the show. And so I kind of wish that they either leaned further into that and just like really made it about the dynamic between the Rose, June, and Louise, or that they like give us more character development for Herbie and some of the other, you know, side characters, the boys, Mazeppa at the, you know, burlesque show. Like, I think that either way could work. Like, and I honestly don't know what the answer is, because I don't think you can remove those side characters. But I also am like,
especially Herbie has his big moment. Like, Herbie has his big moment where he kind of comes to the defense, right? Mm-hmm. Where he finally breaks. Like, I think he's important. He's the one person who, like, I mean, besides Louise and June, who eventually, like, they kind of have to love her a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, she's their mom. And Herbie is the one person who, like, really does love her. And so when he finally is like, no, I can't do this anymore, like, that, I feel like that moment is effective. Yeah.
I do think it's effective, but I just don't think that we have, like, built up enough rapport with Herbie for that to land the way it could. Like, it lands because we see how it affects Rose, not because, I don't know.
Sure. Yeah.
Two other things, and then I'll get to all the good stuff. The spacing of the show feels really weird to me, and like, especially the latter half of it. Like, the whole first act is basically like them as kids, or teens. And then, I don't know, I just feel like the timing is really weird. Specifically, what's weird to me is how we go from, like, Louise, like, just basically having what is essentially her first performance. And then Mazeppa sings Gotta Get a Gimmick. And is like, you have to, you know, if you want to make it, you got to have some kind of gimmick that people see you for. And then in a couple songs, Louise just becomes the most famous burlesque dancer in the U.S., and that's like it. And then it ends. Like, it just
is, it does end really fast.
Yeah, like, it literally is like, hey girl, like, if you want to perform, you got to get a gimmick. And then Louise is like, okay, gets her gimmick, and then is like all of a sudden the number one performer in the U.S. like, that's kind of wild to me. And I just kind of been like, I don't know. I literally feel like Gotta Get a Gimmick could have opened the second act, and we could have gotten a lot more exploration there and cut some material from the first act.
Yeah. I also feel like we don't spend a lot of time. And like, I think maybe also I've been watching a lot of Bob Fosse movies recently, and he like grew up in strip joints, basically, like part of a lot of his psyche. But like, what is, I think, like a positive about is that in like a lot of his films, like, that world always feels like really real, and it doesn't feel like judgmental or like, you know, it just feels very like lived in. And this didn't feel judgmental really to me, but it's like such a short part of it, like when she's kind of a newbie with the women in like the first kind of strip joint or burlesque place that they go to, that it's like those women to me are like so one note, and I kind of wish they weren't. But I don't know if it's just because I've been watching those movies and I think he's really good at showing that world.
Yeah, I think it's probably both. Mm-hmm. And then my last con, which I think is a bit, like, I think a bit of it is just part of the nature of the show, like, for the content. I have mm-hmm. always found the set so underwhelming. And I guess it's because they're they're literally meant to be on a stage. So they're like, here's your stage. And like, I don't know. I just am like, I want something bigger. Like, it feels like the gravitas and the content and the music is so big. And oftentimes it's like an empty stage. And I get that that works. Like, I think it works beautifully for Rose's turn. I don't like that as an example of it's just the stage.
Yeah.
Rose in the back. Like, that's amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like, that's great. Funny. But like, I don't know. I just found myself wanting more. And I've seen a few different productions of it. I've seen the movie. I've seen for reference, we watched the West End production with Imelda Staunton, aka Umbridge, who slayed the shit out of it.
She did.
But yeah. Okay, those are my cons. Now let's just talk about all the great things about the show. For as much as I think they don't dive into other characters, Rose and Louise are such powerful characters, and I think they're explored so well in the show. I think that there are some roles that, like, some roles in musical theater where if the actor just, like, does their job and just does a good job, not even a great or spectacular job, the role itself is so demanding and iconic that they will get a Tony or a Tony nom for it. Like, that is how I feel about both Rose and Louise. Like, if you just show up, and this is not downplaying, you know, Patty or any of the people that have been nominated.
No,
or won
those
Tonys.
People are amazing.
It's similar to me for like Seeley from A Color Purple. It's like, if you can do that, hell yeah, you're going to get a nomination. Like, just showing up is enough.
It's just like difficult enough. It's like Leo sleeping in a bear to get the Revenant or a horse or whatever it is. If you do something hard, you will be rewarded.
Yes. I really loved, so I was looking into Patty's version of Rose, which is one of my favorites. And I really love her perspective on Rose, which is that she says she has tunnel vision, she's driven, and she loves her kids. She is a survivor. I do not see her as a monster. She may do monstrous things, but that does not make a monster. Mm-hmm. And that honestly did change my perspective a little bit on my like abuse aspect and how I like kind of wish it was dived into a little more. But like another truth and one that I learned from that video I watched is that like Rose herself was abandoned by her mother, literally abused by some of her husbands, by multiple partners. Like she is, as much as she is like causing this pain to her daughters, she's also a victim and a big part of, I think, why she's like, she hasn't been able to deal with that pain in herself and is projecting it onto her children. Mm-hmm. I don't think that necessarily, like, makes it okay, but, like, especially putting it in the context of its times, like, when women did not have access to mental health care, but even our understanding of the psyche itself was so different, like, I can understand how something like that would have happened. And I love that Patty has this way where she is both, she's not, like, she is acknowledging the monstrous acts from Rose, but isn't saying that Rose is not a monster herself. And I do appreciate that.
Me too. I feel like people aren't, you know, I kind of believe that people, like calling people monsters, it's like a little reductive of like, I feel like it's something we do when like we want to separate ourselves from people.
Yeah.
And not like recognize
not
that
it's not
human.
Us.
Human beings are capable of terrible things. Yeah.
Yes. A human like me could never do that. Only a monster could. Yeah. Totally feel that. This might be an area where I disagree with you. I think the music all the way through is incredible.
Oh my gosh.
Love even so like one thing I'm embarrassed to say. I used to think Little Lamb was like one of the biggest flops in all musical theater, like one of the biggest throwaway songs. And like, I am so ashamed that I used to have that opinion because I think it's one of the most powerful and tragic songs in the entire show.
Yeah.
The last couple, especially Laura Pulver's version of it. So I think that Laura Pulver is the definitive Little Lamb Louise. And I think that Laura Benanti is the definitive striptease Louise. Based on my personal opinion. But The last couple stanzas of Little Lamb hit me so hard this time. It's okay, I wrote it here. Okay. It's little, so basically she's, if you haven't seen the show, she's like comparing, she it's her birthday, she got this little lamb like doll kind of thing and is like singing to it and all her other dolls. So at this point she's singing to a cat and then a fish and then a lamb. So she goes, little cat, oh, why do you look so blue? Did somebody paint you like that? Or is it your birthday too? Like, why are you blue? Is someone projecting it onto you? Or is it your birthday like mine? Is that why you're blue? And then little fish, do you think I'll get my wish? Little lamb, I wonder how old I am. Like, she doesn't know how old she's turning.
She's nine.
Yeah, like, she's, like, young 20s, probably, and is passing as nine. Yeah,
at least by the people that get to play her. Like, I'm always like, she feels like she's 25.
Yeah. So, I love that song. Every single song that Rose sings, I think, is incredible. I think Some People is great. I obviously, like, Everything's Coming Up Roses and Rose's Turn are, like, fucking incredible. But I think everything she sings is great. I think Gotta Get a Gimmick is an incredible song. But I think that, hot take here, I think that the best song in this show is not Everything's Coming Up Roses, is not Rose's Turn, is not Gimmick, is not Little Lamb. I think it is Let Me Entertain You. And how
you're gonna say that.
Multifaceted of a song it is, and how it works when June is literally a baby and it's used as this like spectacle to show off June's talents. And then is literally like it bookends the show. Like it's you kind of open with June singing "Let Me Entertain You," and it's all her little tricks and flips and splits. And then you end with like Louise doing a strip tease using the song "Let Me Entertain You," and it works just as well, if not better. And the lyrics, like especially when you hear them sung by Louise, I personally can't help but think back to June singing this and being like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, and if you're real good, I'll make you feel good. I'm very versatile. Like a little.
No,
a
the
little
lyrics are great.
Yeah, it's great. But it's like an 8-year-old is singing that to an audience of what was likely a lot of older men.
I wish, I guess I agree with you that the song, I have a personal hang up with that song. Because the first time I heard it was in Ella Enchanted, when the are they elves? I think when they sing it, when her little the little tiny elves, I think they're elves. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think so.
They like when her and Prince Charmant get to that place where they all live and they sing it, and I just have I associate it with that scene to this day, no matter what happens, because it was the first time I ever heard it. But I also think I like the way the lyrics can have different meanings depending on who's singing it. But I think that could have been done. I just don't really like the song from like a musical perspective.
Fair. Like, and it's not like a musical theater song. Like, it's very like variety act. Anyway, one other note, Baby June in London, in the London cast. Give my girl a Tony and
she's
Oscar.
So funny.
And, like, she's that like you got already.
The most annoying child, but in the best way.
In the best fucking way. And then the last promo I want to talk about that I think is a good mirror to like my comment about the sets is where this show lacks in exciting sets, it completely makes up for in its costuming. I think the costuming throughout the show from the variety act to their regular people clothes to especially Louisa's striptease at the end, I think it's all iconic. Good. Okay, last two things I want to talk about. I want to talk about some of the versions of the show and just like honestly give praise to the people that have played these roles. And then I want to talk about one final theme that'll also relate to my recreate a little bit. So the versions of the show, the OG... Rose, as we've mentioned, Ethel Merman. Okay, yeah. I did not know this. The original production received 0 Tony Awards.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
What?
I did know that.
That is insane.
It's insane.
It got a bunch of noms, but it didn't win a single Tony. So then 1973.
Something insane beat it for best musical.
Yeah, it not like not deservedly. I actually
keep
saw
talking.
Twitter
I'm gonna today. Look it up. Keep talking.
Yeah. So anyway, we have 1973. Angela Lansbury plays Rose. 1989. Tyne Daly plays Rose. 2003. We have Bernadette Peters and Tammy Blanchard playing Rose and Louise. 2008. We have Patti LuPone and Laura Benanti playing Rose and Louise. 2015 in the London version, Imelda Staunton and Laura Pulver. And then we also have the movie with Bette Midler. I'm purposely not talking about the movie. It's I don't like it. It's fine yeah. at best.
You also have the movie with baby Natalie Wood and Rosalind Russell, which I do like. It's good. It's an older one.
There's two movies?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even know that.
It's good. Rosalind Russell is good.
So anyway, like those like Ethel Merman, Angela Lansbury, Tyne Daly, Bernadette Peters, Patti LuPone, Imelda Staunton, Bette Midler. Like, what other show has so many iconic figures always mm-hmm. playing a lead? That is what you need to make this show.
Yeah. Also, it lost to The Sound of Music.
Okay.
Which I love The Sound of Music, but yeah. I don't know if it's, like, groundbreaking.
Yeah.
Especially the musical. No, I don't like the musical that. Yeah. As much as I like the movie.
I'm like, we're reading our words.
Yeah.
So the last thing I'm going to talk about is this, like, theme of show business, which I'm kind of like, where did show business go? Like, that used to be such a theme in musicals in the, you know, 50s to 70s. Yeah. Where did that go? Let's bring it back.
But, there's no business like show business.
Yeah. One thing I find particularly interesting about Gypsy, and I think the part of Gypsy that has by far aged the best, is like the idea of child stars and like the ethics of thrusting children into the spotlight and mm-hmm. who that's actually for. And like, I think it's so relevant still today, because in today's world, like, not only does it still happen, it is so much more accessible for mm-hmm. a child to become a star, whether through, you know, more traditional forms like movies and TV. But now, especially with social media, like you yeah. can be a mom with a 2-year-old kid and film them, you know, licking their finger in a weird, funny way. And all of a sudden they're weird licking finger kid. Like, and that's their identity. Like,
yeah, Charlie bit me.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. So I don't know. I think I love that that is a theme that is, I mean, I guess I don't love it because it means that we're still dealing with the problem, but I think it's really fascinating that Gypsy was exploring like the ethics of child stars then, and it's still something so important now. And
it's also probably really, oh, go ahead.
This is my last thing. So but also related to show business, something that I find like, I don't know, it's super ironic, kind of funny. Is like Gypsy Rose Lee wrote these memoirs kind of detailing her experiences and her life. But like Rose is definitely now the most known. Like it came true. The show Gypsy came true. Yeah. And now, like, if you were to ask, I think the average person, I don't know many people who know who Gypsy Rose Lee is, but like people know. Even people that haven't seen Gypsy, I feel like know like Mama Rose, like know yeah. about that.
And I feel like if you know Gypsy
she
Rose,
ended up
you
the most famous.
She did. If you know Gypsy Rose, you like associate it with the true crime case. I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was gonna say, I'm like speaking of child stardom. I'm reading Judy Garland's biography right now, and she had like a very similar relationship with her mother. Which
really.
And she did like vaudeville when she was younger and stuff. So I feel like it's. Not a very like unique story in a sad way, but
yeah. Oh, such is life. Okay. Well, that's my thoughts. Overall, I really love this show. I think there are definitely ways it could be better, but you know what? For being written in probably a 1-year span in 1957 and 1958,
yeah. like, I wrote it like 3 months.
Period, Sondheim, like pop off.
10 out of 10. Oh my god. Okay. Before we go to recreates, I just realized I didn't say anything about The Miller Sign, which is my favorite song from A Little Night Music. It's a bop. It's the greatest song of the show. Petra like doesn't really do much besides sing that song, but when she gets it,
it makes it worth it.
Gets it. It's great. All right. And my recreate is going to be pretty short. this week. It's a little more realistic. So I talked a little bit about Charlotte up above. I'm looking at a doc. But I talked a little bit about Charlotte before. But before I get to her, I want to talk about some of the songs that were removed from the show, but are in Putting It Together, the Sondheim review. And I like them and I think they should be back in the show. So first we've got My Husband the Pig, which is super short, super duper short, sung by Charlotte, which we'll come back to. But in the Putting It Together review, and I think originally in A Little Night Music, it's like an opener to Everyday Little Death. Like, and she's, it's basically, the gist of it is similar to Everyday Little Death. Like, my husband, he's so stupid. He fucks around on me because he knows I won't do anything about it. And he's right, I won't. That's like the premise of it. Like, it's very mean, but it's also very like, I'm letting this happen, basically. And I think it should be back in there. Also cut from the show was Bang. Which I
with Jessie J, song. Nicki Minaj, and Ariana
exactly. Bring Nicki Minaj back to Sondheim. No, it's a very, very sexual song that Carl Magnus sings, and I'm actually not positive who the woman was who was supposed to sing it with him. Because in the review, it's like a duet. Maybe it wasn't a duet. I don't know. But in the review, it's a duet. So that's what I'm going to assume it is. But they replaced it with In Praise of Women, which I like that song. It's like, he's like, women. Like, I like that song. I think it's funny. But I think we could bring Bing back in there somewhere and have, like, Carl. Maybe it's, like, Carl Magnus and Petra. Maybe that's how we bring Petra again. Like, he starts fucking around on everyone, you know, just in the end. So I would bring back those two songs. There are a couple of other songs that were cut, but those are my favorite, too. And then, speaking of Charlotte, I think we should, if I could, I would change Charlotte's ending a bit. I think Charlotte, this is basically what happens, like, to give a little more context. Charlotte decides she's going to seduce Frederick, basically, to, like, help Anne, but also to get back at her cheating husband a little bit. And when he sees what he thinks is, like, them about to engage in some sort of activity, he gets really, really pissed off, and that's how he, like, comes back to Charlotte. He's like, oh my god, I do like you. And it's funny. Like, I think it is funny. I get it in the context of, like, musical theater, musical comedy. Like, I get it. And it's also, like, a little bleak, but in a funny way. But I think with her songs, especially if you leave My Husband the Pig in there, because the whole premise is, like, he fucks around on me because he knows I'm not going to do anything about it. And he's right, I won't. And that's kind of what Everyday Little Death is too. And Everyday Little Death is so, like, honest and sad and so frustrating. Like, I wonder how the show would go if, like, that weren't ultimately, like, played as, like, a musical comedy, like, couple back together in the end.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, like, in my head of heads, if I could, like, change something for my girl Charlotte. Like, fast forward after the end of the show, I'm sure old boy is back to messing around because that's what he does. So I'm going to ask you a question because I kind of have mine. I'm sorry to put you on the spot and I tell you if you do this. But I was like, if she found him cheating again, like, let's decide she would just be like, fuck it, I'm done. What Sondheim song should Charlotte use to be like, fuck off, I'm done? It doesn't have to be a Sondheim song, but I picked Sondheim song. Could I Leave You from Follies? Which I think also just sort of works anyway because it has an ambiguous ending. So if you want to lean on this idea of, like, is she going to be strong enough to do it or is she going to continue to let him treat her this way? It has, like, that great ending where she's like, will I leave you? Guess.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, no.
Okay, I have a non-Sondheim answer and
a
stretch of a Sondheim answer just because I, like, am on the spot. But my non-Sondheim answer is Get Out, Stay Out from 9 to 5.
You didn't say that.
How could I not? But, okay, here's my, like, a bit of a stretch of a Sondheim answer. I'm imagining Charlotte, like, kind of needing to take herself out of the equation, like, to not, like, to imagine someone else, or the impact on someone else. So I'm like, what if she had this vision of, like, her family and sings Children Will Listen? And the idea is, like, careful the decisions you make, careful the choices you're making, like, my children will see this and my children are gonna, you know, like, so that's kind of her moment of, like, if I can't do this for me, I'm going to do it for my future.
My kids. Yeah. Wow. I like that.
Thank you.
And that's basically all I really have. It's a little more realistic than I usually go.
But yeah. So I was going to do a realistic one, and I literally just got so caught up, and I was like, I can't do this. I'm not the one to make Gypsy better. So then I decided to like kind of take a more dive into the show business point I was talking about. And so I was kind of thinking like, who are the like modern Gypsy Rose Lees? I think obviously we can't really know at this moment. Like we don't have all the details of the lives of child stars. And sure. In most cases, we'll probably never know, or at least we'll find out like a lot later the real details. However, there is one child star who I do think was completely exploited and want to talk about a little, which is Alana Thompson, aka Honey Boo Boo. I mean, like, in a really serious way, as much as she is like a comedic, you know, joke of society in a lot of ways, like, imagine being this girl at such a young age whose like entire identity, and not only that, but like her family's financial well-being is built off of people laughing at how ridiculous she is. And if we're being completely honest, like laughing at her appearance and her weight. That is, I just could not fathom that as a child and the pressure that would cause. So while I am most certainly not an expert on Alana, I did want to take a stab at rewriting Little Lamb from her perspective. And you know what? I'm going to acknowledge that this might even be a little problematic, because I feel like I'm like doing the very thing that I'm critiquing, which is like associating her with this part of her that is like put in the spotlight when she was a young kid. But it's also like the only references I have.
I was about to say, it's the only part you know.
So this is Little Lamb as Go-Go Juice. I'm not going to sing it. I'm just going to read it out. Like,
okay.
Go-Go Juice, Go-Go Juice. The next pageant is here at last. Go-Go Juice, Go-Go Juice. Every pageant goes by so fast. Honey Boo, Honey Boo. This nickname makes so much green. Do all kids live like you do? Always having to make a scene. Mama June, Mama June, do you think I'll get my wish? Go-Go Juice, Go-Go Juice. I wonder who I am. I wonder who I am without Go-Go Juice. So I was trying to kind of get at, like, who is she without all of these, like, phrases and catch, you know, euphemisms and stuff. Side note, as I was doing this, I was like, she's like a late teen now. Was on Dancing with the Stars, the most recent season of Dancing with the Stars. But, okay, one thing that was crazy is Rose in Gypsy is very commonly referred to and thought of as Mama Rose, even though there's never an actual saying of that. And then her daughter, June. Okay, and now we have
June, baby June. Mom,
June, who is known as Mama June. Yeah. So, interesting. I don't know. But that's my version of Little Lamb for Alana Thompson.
Oh, I thought that was nice.
Thank you.
All right. That was a good episode.
Yeah, it was fun.
Good job. Do you want to introduce next week?
Yeah, so I'm excited. Next week's theme is makeover. So guess which two shows, and this is a pretty... I won't lie. I feel like some of our themes this season are a little question mark, but
this is a good one. I feel like
we haven't gotten to makeover shows.
We haven't gotten to the really questionable ones. Now that I'm looking at this
one, we haven't, but we'll get there.
Oh my
goodness!
So
we'll see you next week and see what shows we'll be making over.
Can't wait! Great debate makeover.
Yeah, maybe we'll need to do one.
Yeah. All right. Bye.
Bye.